baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Excellent show here. We're dusting off long toss here, bringing it back for the end of the month as we go over what little has happened so far in the baseball world. One of you might have your YouTube thing on and with it not muted, because I'm feeling like, oh, there we go. There's no reverb. Might have been on my end or Adam's, who's not saying anything right now. So there we go. Is anyone else getting an echo? Am I just...
Yeah.
You are getting an echo too, Jen?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, it's gone now. So I think we figured it out. We're good. No echo. This is a lovely start, by the way, everyone who's joined us in YouTube.
This is what happens when you take a month off, man.
A month off and we're pretty rusty, but we're going to get to it here. We are thrilled to be joined by the gang. The band is back together. We'll start here with introducing Garth. Welcome back, bud. Your fishing is done for the year.
Oh, yes. Yes, I am done for, I don't know, to like April or some shit. I don't know, whatever.
Jeez.
Whenever it gets warm enough to actually go back on the lake, because,
And we've got the host of the Flight Deck Podcast, Connor. Welcome back, buddy. How you been?
I've been good. Thanks for having me back. A shame we couldn't talk about more Blue Jays related things because it's been boring as hell.
Yes, it has. We do have some stuff to get to. And obviously, whenever there's not much going on, all sorts of speculation we'll get to. Welcome back to the show, Baseball Jen. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, folks. I've missed all of you.
Right? It's been too long. And then we've also got joining us. I would say he's moved up from, just a rookie on Blue Jays Twitter to one of the heavyweights out there. Lewis, welcome back to the long toss here. Thanks for joining us, bud.
For having me. Yeah, I'm getting up there a little bit, but wish there was right more happening so I could talk about stuff.
All right, gang. Well, let's start with, and of course, all of you watching on YouTube right now, feel free to drop your comments. And we will get to you, Matt Finley, in there. Welcome, Steve. Welcome, bud. We are going to talk to about Teoscar. I know that's the first thing Steve kind of brought up here. So the one thing that has happened on this Blue Jays landscape, and I feel like it's divided the fan base a little bit on the direction this front office is taking. Obviously, Teoscar Hernandez shipped out to Seattle, bringing in a pretty darn good reliever in Eric Swanson and a lefty prospect in Adam Mako. I think a lot of this has to do with an unbalanced lineup and an attempt to balance it, which meant making some difficult decisions. Let's start with you, Lewis, because I know you seem to be the voice of reason amongst the panic on Twitter. When you saw Teoscar shipped out, what was your first thought, and are you happy with the return without knowing what's going on next?
I was just sitting in class, just looking at my phone, and like heart starts racing, and I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, what on earth? Because this had never been part of my thinking at all of what was going to happen. And then I'm like, everyone's freaking out. Like, who are we getting? Who are we getting? I see people like asking for Munoz, and I'm like, okay, everyone's really crazy right now. And then eventually we get the package and see the package and kind of disappointed. But, you know, like the Barrios trade, you start breathing, you start looking at it, and you kind of understand where Atkins is coming from. But I really think the biggest point with this trade is that in isolation, I think Ben Nichols and Smith brought this up, in isolation, we got worse. That's for sure. But that doesn't mean by the end of the offseason, by spring training, our roster is not going to be like complete. It's going to be better. And I really think Atkins wouldn't trade Teo, who we all love, if he wasn't confident in putting a better baseball team on the field next year. So overall, kind of happy, not happy that Teo got traded, but I'm confident.
There is such a thing as addition by subtraction, although it's kind of a tough thing to take in as a fan, especially when you lose a guy like Teoscar, who, let's face it, we all loved him. Like, he was a fun dude to watch. He was a middle of the order bat that, despite his defensive downfalls at times and the ability to make you, pretty nervous sometimes watching him with his routes and stuff in the outfield, he was always consistent at the plate. And he's kind of been the one guy. He was one of the longest tenured Jays. So to watch him go was kind of upsetting. But there's a plan here. Like, do you feel like there has to be? Jen, I want to hear what you think, because I feel like this front office wouldn't make a move like this without, like Lewis said, there being a plan, right?
I'm certain there's a bigger picture here. And when I saw this trade, so there were a few things that I thought. One was that, you know, and not to keep repeating it, but I've said so often that I really didn't think that they were going to extend the guys who were up for extension. I just don't think it's going to happen. I don't even think it's going to happen with Vlad, although I think he's the most likely, with Matt Chapman aside. So it didn't surprise me really that they ended up trading Teoscar. And, you know, we all have to assume that conversations, you know, have taken place between both sides, and, you know, probably they were far apart on Teo's valuation. And then, you know, like I said, this bigger picture of how do we make this team better? Right. And, you know, part of the issue is that, you know, fans rightfully get attached to players, and they get attached to their team, and they attach therefore more value than if you're sitting in the front office and you have to erase emotion and personality from all of it, and you have to be able to look bigger picture. And so as much as it, you know, might sort of hurt on the fan end to lose Teo, all I want to see is that when spring training rolls around, this team is better on paper than it was when it finished last season.
And I think that will be the real decider. I know in the chat here, Warlu22 says, just because they have a plan doesn't mean it's a good one. And time will tell. Like, that's the thing. This plan is unfinished, obviously, and there's a lot of different directions they can go. And I think as a fan who's not being privy to the direction, you know, some of us are getting a little squirrely, but it's one of those things where we just got to wait and see where they go. And I know, Garth, when you look at the directions they can go, do you get a sense that the outfielder that is going to replace Teoscar is going to be a free agent signing? Not that it matters whether they use their assets to go trade for pitching or outfield, however they want to do it. But how do you feel about this, and where do you want to see them go in the outfield?
Well, we were never going to re-sign Teo. Like, we just weren't. He's a two-time silver slugger on the wrong side of 30 who hasn't made a ton of money. You know, he was kind of a late bloomer. He's going to want, like, that $15, $18 million over 4 years or 5 years. That's what his contract's going to – he's going to ask for. And someone will pay him. It's just it couldn't be us. Trading him now instead of waiting for the deadline or just letting him walk in the off season. I mean, we got something. We cleared up about $14 million in payroll. So that $14 million can go towards, like, you know, a center fielder, because we need a center fielder. We need a guy that can get on base, you know, at a 320 clip, 330, 340 clip, somewhere in there, plays a solid defense. And Teo just, he was kind of clogging it up. Like I said during the season, that this offseason, either Lourdes or Teo's gone. And I said it would probably be Teo, because Lourdes is cheaper. He's going to be cheaper if we think about re-signing him, if we want to. And he kind of fits more of what we need. Like, we need a, like, he's more of an average guy who, like, he can I could see him hitting like 310 one season, you know, and having like a 340 OBP. So I think it's going to be a free agent thing. I don't think it's going to be a trade. If we make any major trades, I think it will be for pitching. I think we can probably get a competent center fielder, you know, in the $10 to $12 million a season, like, you know, like a guy like Bellinger. Even though like that kid Tyler said he's already signed. but yeah, like I think it's gonna be a free agent signing. I think or if it's a trade, it's something not major. But I mean, I think free agency is probably the direction they're gonna go. But yeah, I knew we weren't bringing back both of those guys this year. I'm sad to see Teo go. I love him. Mm-hmm. You know, great Jay, great locker room guy from what I see. You know, Vladdy loved him. Lourdes loved him. Like, you know, but I mean,
but if you looked at his skill set, if there was anything you could say about it, is that he was a little bit of a redundancy. And I'm curious, yeah. Connor, if you see this front office now, despite the fact over the last 2 years, if I feel like this front office has been like handedness be damned, we're taking the best hitter. Do you think that focus is shifting a little bit now when we watch Teoscar get shipped out?
Like a couple of things before I even get to that, not to be rude. Like I did. No. When the Teoscar trade happened, it was a lot of things because one, the last image all of us have of Teoscar is dominating against Seattle. And now he's in Seattle. That's what hurt the fan base a lot more.
Yeah.
And then there was an interview that came out with the GM of the Mariners. They wanted and almost had Teo last season. He just said that outright. And which makes me question what we might have got from them back then. But yeah, to get to the right-handed redundancy, I think Luis Castillo in game one showed Ross Atkins a lot of what people were talking about because he pitched the exact same way, dominated for 7 1/3 innings and just killed them. They didn't get anything. And so the second that became an option to get rid of Teo, they did it. Because like you guys are saying, it was Lourdes or Teo. Lourdes was obviously, he was cheaper. So like that was the easier one. And then you obviously have guys like Bo Bichette, Matt Chapman, Vlad, Kirk, Jansen, Springer, all right-handed. If even one of them is left-handed or switch hitting, or say, one of my favorite players, Kevin Biggio, was better. I think this becomes a lot less of an issue because you can't pencil in Kevin Biggio every day to be your sole lefty or one of your better lefties. And so just putting a lefty at 8-9 is not going to work every time because it's just one batter and then 8 going around. So yeah, I think a guy like Brandon Nimmo, guys like Cody Bellinger, Joey Gallo even, because they're definitely the reason that Teoscar is gone because this is probably one of the more left-handed heavy free agent outfields that we've seen in a long time. Mm-hmm. So that is probably the main reason why they got rid of Teo is when they did.
Lewis, if you're guessing, do you think they bring in two left-handed bats?
Yeah, I think it's going to be two. It'll be outfielder, obviously, and then someone who's more in the DH left field role, like a Michael Brantley is a guy that I really think would be a great fit for either the corner outfield and DH spot. But infield-wise, maybe they move on from Biggio. I wouldn't be surprised if they did. You know, I'm sorry, Connor, but a team out there might really like him in a deal. So I think two lefties is where we need to go, and at least one of them has to be someone who's in the top six in the lineup. Because even if you have two lefties that are lefties, if they're sitting in the 7, 8, 9 spot,
who sure, cares, we've seen the damage Tapia and Biggio can do. So yes.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
All right. In the chat, Steve Roffey says, "Where does Barger or Martinez fit in?" And any of you can jump in here. I'll just start with saying, I think personally, when it comes to Aroldis Martinez, he's probably a full year away from getting a chance with the big team here. He absolutely dominated power wise in Double A, but much like most 21-year-olds, his strikeouts were high and his swing choices were questionable at best. Does anyone want to jump in on the idea of Addison Barger possibly making a play to be added to this team?
If Biggio gets traded, which I think is a possibility, I think it shows a large amount of confidence in Barger to perform on this team earlier than some people might think, because he's really sprung out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Like, I only heard of him like, what, 3 months ago. And, you know, if he's like a utility infielder lefty who's doing better than Biggio, can play the outfield a bit if he wants to, I think that there's a good chance the front office has a lot of confidence in him going into the year.
There's an interesting thought in the chat here. Matt Finley piped up and said, Biggio, I think, can improve if he's given the opportunity to play every day at one position and have a front office that's confident in him. Now, I'm curious what you guys think about this, because Biggio is 28 at this point, and I always have this sentiment personally when a guy hits that age that you can flip his baseball card over, and kind of what you see on the back is probably what you can roll the dice on him being. Does anyone feel there's a higher ceiling on Biggio than we've seen? Garth, thoughts?
I think he has, like, this is it. This is his, like, last season. This is his last chance. Like, the shift is kind of going away. He could be valuable. He plays solid defense in three positions. They kind of have a logjam right now, like, with him and Merrifield and Espinal. And I could see, I mentioned it the other day to somebody, and they thought I was insane, but I think that they might cut, like, why wouldn't you sell high on Espinal? Like, Merrifield's there for sure. Like, he's not going anywhere. He's signed. Then they're like, okay, well, who's going to be our backup shortstop? Like, we have guys like Otto Lopez. Like, what are we doing with Otto Lopez? What are we doing with him? Are we just going to stick him in AAA again and call him up for 8 games and get him 1 at bat? Like, eventually these guys need to be given a legitimate shot in the major league system, on the major league team. So, like, I think moving on from Espinal is possible. But Biggio, like, this is it. Like, if he doesn't come out of spring training and, like, show us something in the first month or two, like, he has to go. Like, we can't keep a 28-year-old around, you know, just because he has a left-handed bat.
Especially when he does possibly fit in with an organization that is, let's say, rebuilding or not really contending right now. You know, like, Kevin Biggio does have value, just not to a team that is looking to win the World Series like the Blue Jays are. And I'm not saying Biggio doesn't have value, by the way, but I'm agreeing with you, Garth, on the idea of, like, it's time for him to, they've eliminated the shift. You know, Robo umps are 1 year away. Like, everything's lining up for Kevin here, but if he doesn't show us something, that's all irrelevant.
You know, and everybody can, like, oh, well, he's been hurt. Yeah, but, like, fuck, injuries happen, man. And if you can't stay on the field, like, eventually you don't get to use, like, oh, I've been hurt excuse if you're always hurt. So this is it. Like, this is his season to either become a full-time major league player or, like, a utility guy, like a solid one. Or he's just going to bounce around between rebuilding teams for the next 4 or 5 years, and then that'll be it.
Jen, thoughts on this?
I wanted Biggio traded last year.
I've been very vocal about that.
Or during the year. Like, I did. And I will say he performed better last season than I would have guessed he would have performed. Okay. So credit to him for that. But you're right. Like, and it's funny about him being 28, because I always initially think of him as being younger when his name pops into my head, right? Because he still seems underdeveloped as a player. Mm-hmm. And then when you remember that he's 28, you're like, yeah, he's been around for a while. And then that brings me back to, you know, I think what you see is what you get out of this guy right now. And I don't know that it's going to get much better than what we've seen. And, you know, as has already been mentioned, there is a fair amount of redundancy here. So something has to give, right? You're either putting your chips in on Biggio and trading one of the minor league guys, or you're saying, nope, we like what's in our minor league system that's going to be here, you know, sooner rather than later. And so then that means we need to make room.
Couldn't agree more. Lewis, when you, I want you to answer this one here. So in the chat, Scott Farr says, Bichette needs to be moved to second base this season. Espinal can shift to shortstop. Biggio stays utility moving around. In your opinion, do you think that Santiago Espinal, despite being good defensively, has enough with his bat to be anything more than a guy who can play shortstop and second base and move around? Like, would you feel comfortable with Espinal as our everyday shortstop?
Lewis, you're muted.
You're muted here, bud.
Damn it. That's why I didn't listen to it before.
You were killing it, I'm sure.
I know. I was trying. Yeah, my problem, Espinal being my everyday shortstop, I'm trying to win a World Series here. No offense, Espinal, but your defense is amazing in a bench role. And between Merriweather, Biggio, and Espinal, I'm not sure how much playing time he's going to get. His defense is amazing. I think we underrate that a lot. But Bichette out at shortstop every day, sure, he throws the ball away every second chance he gets, but he's also hitting way better. One thing about Biggio that I was trying to mention before, but I was muted, is that he has three minor league options left.
You're like, no one's listening to me.
It's like, what's happening? Anyway. Biggio has three minor league options left. Is Biggio worth more to you in a trade, or is he worth more to you sitting in the minor leagues, ready to go and get another chance if needed? I was wondering if that's a conversation that maybe the Jays are having right now.
Connor, you're a Biggio guy. Jump in here. What do you think?
I don't know. Biggio guy is, I guess, the right way to put it. But
you have his jersey hanging behind you right now.
I know. It's there. Vladdy is.
If there's anyone who's a Biggio guy, it's you. Yeah.
Yeah. It's but when it comes to Cavan, the main thing, like we've already mentioned, the shift's going away. It's put up or shut up time. Like it's a matter of there was a moment where he was terrible for the first month and a half of the season. He went back down to AAA, found something, came back up, was amazing for about 6 weeks, and then kind of just went away again. If he can find anything of that 6 weeks, granted it's 6 weeks, if he can find anything of that 6 weeks, he is, I think, more valuable to this team than Santiago Espinal. Because Santiago Espinal, if like by all the defensive metrics last year, Cavan Biggio was obviously not as good. He was about as like good as Santiago Espinal defensively at second base. And he had the added ability of playing first base and the corners in a pinch. And if you are desperate and just throwing stuff at the wall, you can play third base, but that's probably never going to happen again. But yeah, if he can just bat 230, 240 and have like a 320 on base, and I will love it for this team. But if he can't, Addison Barger's there and he's on the 40 man now. So that's the big, that's a big thing. And I think Garth mentioned earlier, Otto Lopez is just wasting away in AAA. Like yeah, granted, he came really up. Created. Yeah, it's ridiculous. He came up the last two, three games of the season. Granted, they were the last two, three games of the season. He looked good.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's ready to play, and they just need to find a way to get him in. So I think Espinal and Biggio are kind of flip-flop. Like it's like kind of like last year. They're flip-flopping between who is really more important and more valuable to this team. And I think Espinal is ultimately going to be the odd man out in the three, because Merrifield, you can't get rid of him. Biggio, like Lewis said, has the options. And Espinal, he was an all-star last year. And that carries some weight in this offseason anyway. So if he could probably fetch you, I know it came out like a week before the Teoscar trade, but in The Athletic, it came out that said like a fair deal was like Chris Flexen and Penn Murphy from the Mariners for Santiago Espinal and someone else. And I'm like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So if they could net something like that for Santiago Espinal, I think, yes, you trade him without a doubt. But Cavan, I don't want to get rid of this jersey behind me, but he's making it very difficult to do it.
Well, I'm curious what you think then, or and anyone can jump in here. Eric Swanson was a sneaky good addition to this bullpen. And I don't think the fan base is giving enough credit to how good this bullpen actually could be, especially with one more addition. How are you guys feeling about this bullpen? Jen, are you a little bit more confident as you go into 2023 here, or do you still want to see some big arm added?
I mean, everybody wants somebody who throws, you know,
105,
plus, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's something that's lacking, but Swanson has swing and miss stuff, oddly enough, without the fastball velocity. So that's good enough for me, I think. You know, adding him definitely improves the bullpen. We'll see.
And I think, like, I think we have some guys in the minors right now that are like, they're knocking on the door. Like, mm-hmm. Zulueta, he is like this close. If he comes out in spring training and just, you know, is throwing gas, can hit the strike zone like he did all year. I mean,
it was really interesting. Like, we just had Zach Britton on the show here. And of course he was the catcher for the New Hampshire Fisher Cats by the end of the season. And we asked him what arms he was impressed with in this organization. And the very first thing he said was Zulu. Yep. He said, like, literally the first pitch he took from him, he kind of had to like mentally prepare for the rest of that bullpen session. Cause he was like, whoa, okay. And then from there on, that whole session, he was throwing 98 to 102. And he was just like, this kid has more gas than anyone I've caught, which was like a big thing to hear a catcher, you know, a pro catcher say. And he also mentioned, you know, like Hagen Danner's another guy who throws 100. And these are both guys who had injury plagued seasons this last year. And very, like you said, Garth, may very well take that step forward.
Well, and we still, like, we're going to have a full year of Zach Pop. We're going to have a full year of Anthony Bass. Like, I know it just, like, everyone seems to think when you get traded from an organization, you just, like, magically go to this new city and everything is the exact same as it was before. I mean, these are human beings. Like, you have to move. You have to, you know, some people have families. They have kids. They have, you know, to deal with school. Like, there is something to be said for being with an organization at the beginning of the year, having a full off season training with, like, the trainers that you're going to have all year, you know, and you get into that program and like what your new organization wants from you. And I think Zach Pop's going to have a big year. I think Anthony Bass is going to have a big year. I think this bullpen is solid. And if we have a couple of guys in the minors, like we didn't have last year, we didn't have somebody we could call up and throw 102.
Very true.
You know,
we were throwing Matt Gage and being like, please be good. And he was.
Yeah.
So like,
and he was
but
great.
but you didn't want to be like,
yeah, pitching development is one of the weaknesses of this organization as well. Right. And so if there are a couple of guys who could potentially, you know, take that next step, then that definitely bodes well. And then, you know, I have no idea whether or not he'll, you know, make an appearance, but there's Nate Pearson out there as well.
Oh, it's so
now, hold on a sec.
He was good in the Dominican Republic. I think he was really good.
Hold on a sec. What I was going to say was that they need to make a decision on him as well, perhaps, as to does he have a role or does he not? And if he doesn't,
He's the Kevin Biggio of the pitching staff. It's like, this year you put up or you fuck also, off. Like,
yeah,
sucks. Like, share a last name with
we
him.
Can't keep giving you chances. Like, and it's the same thing. Like, oh well, like injuries and mono and all that. Some people are just snake bitten and they remain snake bitten. And until Nate Pearson can have a season where, you know, he can go out and do, you know, 50 relief appearances, then whatever, man. Like, I mean, you might as well give him a shot because he has zero trade value.
Yeah. I think the one thing about Pearson is every year we've consistently talked about him, it's went from, please, like, you got to be good. You're going to be in the middle of this bullpen. Now it's just do anything. Do anything and you're a plus. Like, and we were talking about we have more depth. He's in AAA now. He's a guy that's going to be at worst in AAA for us. Zulu's going to be there. Matt Gage is going to be there. Because by comparison last year, who are we calling up? Like,
well, Jeremy this Beasley is, for this a little is, bit of point time? Like, this is a very good point, Connor. Even if you look at the starting depth in AAA going into 2023, it's going to be far superior to what we saw. I mean, I really liked Max Castillo, but I mean, that's our depth guy, you know?
Casey Lawrence.
Thomas like Hatch. I don't want to see Casey Lawrence, Thomas Hatch. Like, it, I feel so much more comfortable with Mitch White in AAA as the guy who could. I understand the eye pop you made there, Connor.
Fucking breaks here, Belford.
Mitch White is something. He's a person. I'll say that. He's a body.
He definitely has a contract with the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yes, he is a Toronto Blue Jay in the same vein that Trent Thornton is still a Toronto Blue Jay. Like,
all right. Well, I have more faith in Mitch White than I do Casey Lawrence. I'm sorry. I don't know. should we talk pitching? We're talking it right now, but where when Jen, when you look at the holes that need to be filled, two starters?
For me personally, yes. We know they're going to give every possible opportunity for Mr. Kikuchi to make that rotation. We know that.
Do you guys think, I'm curious if anyone wants to jump in here, do you think it's possible that Yusei Kikuchi could want to start bad enough that he would agree to go to AAA for $10 million a year and first injury if he's dominating AAA get called up? Like, do you think he's like, I'm a big leaguer, I will go, bury me in the pen if you have to.
He did that. He said that mid-season when he got put in the bullpen in the first place. But
he offered.
I don't think he's going to do it again.
No, right?
Like, no, right. Because, he was good out of the bullpen, relatively, for what he was as a starter. So just do any, like, he's a
Nick. I mean, he was handled with kit gloves. Yes, I mean, he's selected when they put him in.
Yeah, 14-1, let's put him in for an inning.
Yeah, with what they're paying, I think they need two starters, but with what they're paying him, right? You can't overlook him. That's the thing. You can't just say, we're just going to kind of hide you over there and, you know, play you in the most, you know, only in the blowouts or something like that. Not with what they're paying him and not with the fact that they need, you know, two starting pitchers. And I'm not saying that he should necessarily start the season in the rotation. I'm not necessarily saying that. I'm saying that they're going to give him every opportunity to earn that fifth spot out of spring training. And if he doesn't, he's next man up when somebody goes down with an injury.
I have a question, and I think it'll be very important to the Kikuchi thing. Are we starting with 10 people in the bullpen again? Or are they going 26 for the whole year? Because last year you could have, I think it was 28, and you could have 10 people in the bullpen. So I think if it's 8, he's a starter. But if it's 10, he's the swing man where Ross Stripling started last year. Like, that's...
I think he could, like, he signed a 36 over 3 years. But he got paid 16 last year. He's making 10 the next two seasons.
Yeah.
There's plenty of good relievers that make $10 million a season.
But like, is he a good reliever?
but that's the thing. Like I think his stuff would play better in the bullpen. Like
tell him, say
you got one inning, go throw gas. Because like you tell him you have 5 innings, go throw gas. He's just like, nah, I'm just gonna throw this fucking slider like 80% of the time.
But I think that's the problem, right? If you can't get this man who throws 98 from the left-hand side to believe in his fastball by the time he's 31, can you?
I'm curious what the impact will be of him working with the training staff for the entire offseason.
Yeah.
Right? Whether or not they can actually turn that mentality around.
Well, another big thing to look at Kikuchi is like they really, really, really messed around with his delivery last year. When he came over from Seattle, he had that hitch at the top. You know, when he got to the top of his windup, he'd stop and then, you know, go into his release. And then they tried to get rid of that. And I mean, Lewis would know better than any of us. I mean, like what it's like to completely change your delivery in the middle of a season. Like, I think a full season, off season of working and getting that delivery locked in, maybe he finds something next year. But I know it's tough to make a major adjustment. And it was kind of the same thing that Tapia did with his, you know, trying to get him to get more of a launch angle. Like, it took him a couple of months. He was god awful at the beginning of the season, and then he became a semi-serviceable outfielder. So I think, you know, maybe a full off season. Like, he didn't get to talk with any Blue Jays people last year because of the lockout. So I don't know, maybe.
Lewis, you, and I like that, Garth, that's a positive spin there. And Lewis, you tend to be a glass half full guy. Do you have any faith that Kikuchi can find it over this offseason? And do you project him more as a starter, or do you think that they're going to put him in the pen?
I just have no idea. I think he's going to be in the pen for majority of the year, but there's no avoiding him starting a game in 2023 next year. What year is it?
Yeah, they just kind of roll together at this point.
Like, yeah, geez, November already? Oh my god. Anyway, he's gonna start games for us next year. I'm not confident in those games roll around when he's on the mound, but he's got stuff. The Jays signed him for a reason, and like Jen said, he's spent, now we're coming up on a year of him being in the organization, you know, and that's gonna hopefully give him a chance to settle down and say, okay, here's a list of what you need to fix. And sure, it might be a long list, but now he has time to go through it with the staff, training, working on pitch design. And, you know, spring training is where we're going to see it. You know, it's going to be raw. It's going to be a bit weird, but I think we're going to start seeing some results. And again, it all comes back to confidence in baseball. Like, how much do you believe in everyone? He's a bit lower on the spectrum right now, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he came into next year being maybe we'll see like two Julian Merriweather innings from him, like in New York, and just be like, oh, this is, oh, let's go. And then we'll never see him again. But I don't know.
Yeah, I just looked up Kikuchi's stats as a reliever last year. He had 33 strikeouts in 18 innings.
He played late game.
Yeah, like, so he had, there's something there out of the bullpen. It's just, could you not have a whip of 1.4 out of the bullpen? That'd be great.
So right now in chat, there is a pile of folks bringing up the top prospect in the system, not named Gabriel Moreno, right? Ricky Tiedemann. Can he contribute to this team in 2023? And is it fair, and anyone can feel free to jump in here, is it fair to put any expectations on this 20-year-old kid? Or should we just let him roll through AAA and force the issue, kind of like was done with Alek Manoah? And don't forget, too, Alek Manoah was 3 years older and still very young when he was brought up, right?
I think the thing with Tiedemann is, if we see more than 10 innings out of him this year, it's a failure, or something terrible has gone wrong because of injuries. Because he had a little bit of time in AAA at the end of last year, and he needs that full, at least run up until, if we see him in September, that's probably one thing. But I don't think because Alek Manoah, it was more so of, oh, we just need somebody right now because we have TJ Zoik starting the third game of the season. Like, we just need something. And I think with the situation that Tiedemann's coming into, there's already Alek Manoah, Kevin Gausman, Jose Barrios, hopefully, cross your fingers, Yusei Kikuchi if he's a starter. So he's not going to be asked to do a lot. He'll come out of the bullpen maybe, even if he comes up. But if he's starting games this year, it's a problem.
Yeah, right? It would almost be like Alek Manoah, like you brought up, right? Like, when they called Alek Manoah up, and this is something that people tend to forget, it wasn't like they were like, oh, we've got to get him up, he's burning it up, and he was burning it up, but also, there was like injuries falling from the skies.
Team that has its sights set on a world championship cannot rely on guys who haven't been there. Mm-hmm. Right? They can't. That would be a complete and utter failure of the front office if they were expecting, you know, contributions from guys like Tiedemann this season. I would see that as a failure of the front office. Unless Tiedemann absolutely forced the issue, which I don't think is going to happen, right? Because he would have to have like an unbelievable start to his AAA season, you know, and maybe he does. He would have to absolutely force the situation. But if the Blue Jays put themselves or find themselves in a position where they've got to rely on him for, you know, okay, like Connor said, 10 innings for like more than that, then they failed. They failed to address the starting pitching need.
Yeah, I know in chat here, Dalton Maris says, any contributions by rookies in a championship season are unexpected bonuses. And that's basically what you got to look at it as, right? Like any contribution from someone who wasn't on that.
That's Houston Astros, how rookies do in the playoffs.
That's right.
That's an outlier.
Yeah. No, Connor. Always bet on your rookies.
Yeah, especially when that rookie is replacing your franchise shortstop just somehow and it works.
Let's talk payroll really quickly here. All right. Because, and I don't know, I could be completely off base and obviously nobody in the front office is going to come out and actually tell us, but it does feel like there's another mega contract that could be thrown out in free agency this year, you know, another $100 million contract. Does anyone here have a feeling that this organization isn't going to spend the money? Or do you all kind of feel confident that there could be a contract?
We've never given out a mega contract. George Springer, 150 is our biggest contract.
Yeah.
That's relative.
I guess when I say mega, I meant for Toronto standards. And you are correct there, Garth.
Why does it have to be Toronto standards? We're not fucking Kansas City.
No, agreed. You know what I
mean? Like we should be pushing, like we should be saying, hey, like we're a team. So yeah, like why couldn't we go out and get Brandon Nimmo 5 years, 120? You know, like why not? Like that's the going rate for good players. If we want to have good players on our team, we can't fill it with guys on $7 million a year contracts.
I know there's a pile of reasons to not want Brandon Nimmo, but man, there's a lot to like in him and how he would balance this lineup a little bit. You know, he's high on base percentage. He hits the ball all over the field, but doesn't have a ton of power. He'd be on base. I would love to see them go out and do just that. And if they did do that, does anyone think it's possible if they actually do go out and get a Nimmo that they could convince Springer to hit in the two hole? Or am I being crazy altogether and we should just leave one of the best leadoff hitters ever where he is?
I think if you do put Nimmo at the leadoff, it kind of creates the same redundancy because it's lefty at the top, seven or eight straight righties, lefty again. I think
You can get Michael Brantley with it.
But Michael Brantley would be like, you guaranteed middle of the order guy. But I think the thing with Nimmo is if you slot him two, you put him in front of Vlad and whoever's batting fourth. We don't know anymore because Teoscar's not there. And you put him between George and Vlad. It gives him the best opportunity to get on for 3, 4, 5. And you still get the leadoff home runs from George Springer. So
I sure like those leadoff home runs when there's an RBI attached to it, though.
It counts, man. Runs are runs. They count.
That's why two is better than one. Scott Carter with an awesome comment here. He's like, I'm good with Nimmo and I usually am down on everything. So a thumbs up from him there. Go ahead, boys.
This whole offseason, I've been just looking at Fangraphs and looking at every single person that played center field.
Yeah.
And I've been just trying to find the perfect fit. And I've decided there is no perfect fit. Like no matter who you're trying to acquire, whether it's Nimmo in free agency or someone in trade, you're going to lose something. You're risking a bad contract. You're risking a move that in the long term isn't going to be good. And I just keep on going through all the options and everything just comes back to Nimmo. Like he's for the next 3 years, which is.
Every free agent contract is a risk. Like, yeah. If there was no risk, I don't know
why we're not just doing it.
90% of the time, free agent contracts are overpays anyways. So, like,
yeah.
Just do it.
Unless you're like the Nationals signing Max Scherzer, you're probably gonna fuck up a contract. Like, you know, honestly, like there's no like when you get up to that type of money, it's not like there's no sensible thing. It's just we need to win. We want to win. Let's do it. You know,
we're I think we're now at the point where if Brandon Nimmo signs with the Blue Jays, do not be surprised if the contract is more than George Springer. That's just the going rate. I think if Nimmo will probably get 6 or potentially 7 years at maybe like 160, like 165, and I wouldn't be surprised at that. My thing is there's so many teams in on him that it'll drive up his market. Because the thing with the George Springer market was when it came down to it is the Mets and the Blue Jays. Now there's like the Rockies are in on Brandon Nimmo for some reason, I guess. Sure, because he's from Colorado, I believe. We're in on him. The Mets are obviously going to want to keep him. The Yankees, I heard, were in on him if they don't get Judge back. So, like, there's tons of teams that he could go to, and that's going to drive up his market to where it might be equal or more than George Springer's contract.
I have this weird thought in the back of my head where COVID led to us getting Springer. This is just a side thing. Because every team in baseball stopped spending money, but the Jays were still in a great spot because of where Rodgers was with COVID. And like, imagine if COVID didn't happen, you'd have teams like Boston and like even the Yankees and Houston possibly still wanting Springer. And like, that's just a weird thought I have. Don't worry about it.
I mean, you're probably not wrong because that was the one offseason where the Blue Jays were in on everybody. Like, we were LeMahieu, Springer.
But Springer was $150 million. Springer was, if you look at the deal, it's almost kind of cheap. Like, Chris Bryant got $170 million last year. Like, how does that work? I think the Springer deal's almost on the scale of how free agent deals go, you know, you're always losing and he is getting injured a bit, but this is pretty close to a win as you'll get.
By the way, Connor, if the Rockies are actually in on Nimmo too,
they're in on him because he's from Colorado.
But I just don't understand that organization. Like, they just make no sense to me. Just getting rid of Arenado and then going all in on Chris Bryan. And now, anyways.
Yeah. Don't, Scott.
Don't try and understand it. Yeah.
Understand the Colorado Rockies. All right. No, like, they are, if not the worst run organization in baseball, they're pretty fucking close, man.
They gave $50 million to the Cardinals to take a top three
their
MVP
best
candidate.
Player, like
the top three MVP candidate this year.
He got paid $26 million this year, and he did not hit a home run in Colorado.
Chris Bryant didn't. Oh my god!
Yeah,
come on,
that's amazing.
I could hit a home run in Colorado.
Like with all the people you see hitting 500 and 490 foot bombs, Chris Bryant, you couldn't get one scraper like. Even
couldn't get one in 199 at bats, zero home runs in Colorado.
Man,
like wow, that is a wild stat. I did not know that. Like, wow. All right, let's pivot a little bit here. I know we've already talked free agency and trade and some of the holes that are needed. Obviously, a strength of this organization is catching. This has probably been talked about ad nauseum, but one thing that I've noticed in some of these rumors and trade proposals that have come out recently is that Danny Jansen is kind of sought after. And I really figured that it would be a lot more Moreno and Kirk talk, but we're hearing just as many, if not more, rumors about Danny Jansen. Do you think this means anything? I mean, it's not like the Blue Jays are tipping their hand, but.
No, what team wouldn't want a guy that, like, is great with the pitchers, calls an amazing game. If he's healthy, the dude's got 30 home run power. Like, those catchers don't grow on trees. And I think there are probably 25 teams in MLB that would love to have Danny Jansen as their catcher. And I think if one of them has to go, man, you have to sell high on Kirk. You have to. You have to.
Yes.
Like, the guy is a silver slugger. He's 23 years old. He has, what, 3 or 4 years left before, you know, he hits free agency. Like, I just, man, like, I would hate to, like, be 2 years down the road and Danny Jansen is fucking lighting it up with, like, I don't know, the Mets or somebody, and Kirk has back problems or hip problems. He already had, he's already missed time, significant time, with hip injuries. Trade him. People, like, whatever team gets him, they're going to be like, oh, awesome, we can market him, he's lovable, which he is, obviously. But man, if we, like, we need to sell high, we could get like a legit haul back for Alejandro Kirk, and we couldn't get that for Danny Jansen.
I got a question for all of you here, because I feel like I might be super zoned in on this one particular thing, but I kind of went through all of the teams that won the World Series over the last 10 years and just calculated the amount of experience behind the plate. And the only team with under 10 years in the last 10 years was the Los Angeles Dodgers in 2020. And I mean, Will Smith is a top five catcher in all of baseball, maybe even higher. And even that, with paired with Austin Barnes, was still 9 years. So if you look at Moreno, who has played 25 games, and Alejandro Kirk, who is going into, you know, year four, I guess. I mean, he was called up in 2020, but he only played at the end of the season there, right? So he's only had two real full seasons. Do you feel comfortable with that enough? Is that enough experience for a team that wants to win a World Series, Connor?
No, it's not. It's not. And I love Kirk, but even just on the fact that he's in 2 or 3 years, he's a full-time DH, I think. And that's going to, and that's kind of, and this is, might be completely me shooting and seeing if it sticks. A big reason why we had to get rid of Teoscar Hernandez when we did is because Alejandro Kirk takes up all the DH time. Because if, say, Alejandro Kirk's not on the team this year, Teoscar Hernandez is pretty much a DH the entire time. And if you get rid of Alejandro Kirk now, you can get a Michael Brantley more consistently in your lineup. Because if you have Kirk and you have Michael Brantley, like, there's one of them sitting, like, and on the,
even especially on the, if Springer goes through another season, yes, like, and he did
you
this
have
year.
And you have to rest George, you have to give Chapman some days off because he plays every day there. You got to give Vlad your typical days off. And another thing is, if say Danny Jansen's gone, do you trust a Gabriel Moreno to catch 90 to 100 games for the first time with, and then having Alejandro Kirk to like pair with him? Because I don't. Like,
I love all three of these guys.
Yes, this isn't to hate on any
experience matters, though, right?
Yeah.
Well, and what Garth said, if, you know, 25 teams would be interested in a Danny Jansen, then that means the Jays are interested in a Danny Jansen, right? Yeah. You're not trading away your most experienced catcher and banking on Gabriel Moreno in a season that really, let's be honest, this upcoming season is do or die. It really is for this organization. And so you can't rely on Kirk and Moreno to be your two catchers. Yes, you just can't do it. And I said at the trade deadline, they should have traded Kirk, right? Trade, sell high. And I still absolutely believe that. And that is not a comment on Kirk as, you know, the player, you know, fan experience, watching him play, any of that, right? But again, this is a business. And the business of baseball, if you want to contend, is you've got to get better. And so you got to trade from your positions of strength, and you've got to sell high on some guys, even when you don't want to part with them. But they can't. I don't think they could rely on Kirk and Moreno.
And yeah, it's going to hurt. Alejandro Kirk getting traded is going to hurt. But there are going to be some substantial assets coming back that are going to fill some areas of need. And if you look at this catching the trio, right? I mean, Alejandro Kirk's, what everyone keeps saying about moving him is, how in the world do you replace that bat? Because he was, and I, he was incredible, right? Silver Slugger, all-star, some of the highest numbers stat-wise for any catcher in baseball when it comes to offense, like right near the top. He was a top five catcher in almost every category. But just because you move from him, right, doesn't mean that there's not going to be areas. I guess what I'm saying is the wins above replacement, right? The wins, whether it is accumulated from the pitching you get back or whatever hole you're filling, Kirk just seems like the obvious guy.
Like, okay, the rumor is like maybe Milwaukee would be interested in him. And like getting a Corbin Burns for a Kirk and prospects, like whatever you need to do to
Brandon Woodruff.
Brandon Woodruff. Like, if you're getting a pitcher like that back, that's your replacement. You know, like, yeah, that's what you're, you know, and who knows? Maybe Moreno lights it up next year. Maybe he plays great. You know, like, we have to find out eventually. But I don't want to find out eventually with him. And I feel more confident finding out what Moreno is as a catcher with Danny Jansen back there than with him and Kirk.
And
I mean, it's a little bit of an embarrassment of riches, really. Like the fact we're able to have this discussion, and I know there's a lot of people disagreeing with us in the chat. You know, a lot of people are saying keep Moreno and Kirk. Maybe that's the right move, but
I don't think I just don't see it being the right move to catch veteran pitchers when you're trying to go for a championship. I don't think you can rely heavily on a guy who just simply hasn't done it at that level, right? And this really truly is, they have to get it done this year. I don't necessarily mean win the World Series. They have to get out of the first round, right?
You need to win
the
division.
They have to. And so that's the way that I'm looking at this. And unfortunately, if you are making a trade to get better, you have to give up somebody where it is going to hurt, right? A lot of fans want to give up nothing for something, and it doesn't work that way.
And this is the downfall of an unbalanced lineup. It's not easy to balance an unbalanced lineup. There are some major chords that need to get pulled. Go ahead, Connor.
I mean, like, there's two things. I looked up Alejandro Kirk's stats. He was a below average hitter in the second half. He had his OPS of 661. So that's not something a lot of people talk about. And even, like, Alejandro Kirk is going to be, he's going to be a good player for many, many years, but Danny Jansen is going to be your guy. Because people like to bring up the fact that Danny was injured a lot. The first injury, oblique, yes, that was a given, because that's you can't just give that. But the second time he got injured, that was freak accident. He got hit on the hand by a fastball.
Yeah.
Like, that's if Danny stays healthy, like relatively, like Garth said, he's got the potential for 30 home runs. And
Connor, you were just talking about too, like you were talking about the DH spot, right? And that's the thing, is if you move Kirk, the thing with Moreno, even though he doesn't have the experience either, or has even proven to be as good as Kirk, he can play. We watched the last game of the season, right? He played left field, second base, third base. I'm not saying they're going to move him that much, but he definitely has a body type and the ability to play other positions that's just going to allow you to be more versatile in that lineup.
Yeah, and I think one thing that we as Blue Jays fans need to, like, realize, we have been spoiled with some of the best offenses we've, like, ever seen in the league for the last 2-3 years. And while if getting rid of Alejandro Kirk means you balance out the pitching more, if you're a worse hitting team but a vastly superior pitching team than you were last year, you're going to win more games, regardless of how you do it. And I think all it takes is one hot streak or one cold streak from, like, any of the guys in the lineup, which we saw last year, to balance that completely back out. Just get pieces that work in the team system and just figure out a way to win the division. They have to win the division. They have to get out of the first round. They can't be the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, just
hey, and that's honestly such a good point. All right. And that is that if you subtract from offense, but, you know, make it up in pitching and defense, sure, a highly offensive team is really fun to watch. And listen, I can speak from this, because in 2004, the Calgary Flames, my team, went all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. And this was when the trap was like literally they dismantled the trap and put in a whole bunch of new rules to get rid of the clutch and grab after that year. And people called Flames hockey the most boring hockey on the planet. They'd win 2-1. But let me tell you, as a fan, I don't give a shit how they win. it was so fun watching my team go to the championship, even though they didn't win. Right. So despite maybe it not being quite as fun a team, are you going to tell me the Cleveland Guardians fans didn't enjoy watching this year's baseball team? Right.
Yeah. It is as high powered offense we have. We scored no runs in game one of the playoffs. And then on the reverse flip side, we scored 8 runs in the game two and we lost that. So like, if I got to watch the Toronto, I was about to say Maple Leafs, that's, they're really the same team. If I got to watch the Toronto Blue Jays win by only scoring 4 to 5 runs a game, but our pitching only gives up 2 or 3, I will be happy as can be. Like,
Lewis, do you want to chime in on this catching conundrum? Do you kind of feel the same way here that Kirk's probably the guy, or is there a different direction you see working?
Geez, there's so many pluses and minuses just looking at each guy. Danny Jansen, I agree with you, Jen. I can't see him being traded. He is the most, I can't remember the word, but he's been behind the plate the longest.
Experience?
He knows the players. That's the word. I don't know where I am right now. He's got the most experience behind the plate. He knows the staff, and I can't see him getting moved. Kirk, man, he is so good. He is so, so, so good. Like, if I'm getting a Lars Nootbaar with like 5 years of control and like with really great upside for my outfield that desperately needs good defenders and a lefty bat, or I'm getting Corbin Burns, I'd be upset with just Woodruff because he doesn't pitch that much. But you're right, with Kirk, there is such a good opportunity to make your team better in other areas while definitely weakening the strongest part of your team, which is offense. Moreno, I think Moreno's tough because I can't see him being traded for a pitcher who's really, really good. Like on a team that is mediocre, if that makes any sense. Like I can't see the Brewers putting their chips in Moreno behind the plate for a guy like Brandon Woodruff. I don't think that's a trade they'd make for the same reasons why we don't want Moreno starting catching 80 games for us next year, is because he doesn't have experience. So, you know, with Moreno, I think he'd be traded for a prospect like Alec Thomas. Like you can see right. Arizona would be like, you know, okay, we'll take Moreno. Sure. He can catch 80 games for us. We don't care. We'll see how it goes. And if it goes well, sure. You get your lefty outfielder prospect who you got control of forever. But yeah. Right back to it. Kirk's going to get you the biggest package back.
Biggest return.
Major league talent.
Well, and
I'm sorry, buddy. There's just so much going on in chat. If I don't get to it now, I'm never going to get to it. Simon Dennis says, Jansen isn't 34. He's 27. He's peaking right now at the right time with our winning window. It would take something very significant for him to be worth moving. Very true.
He was the best hitting catcher last year.
He was. Steve Roffey says Kirk was the best overall catcher last year. Defensively, it was Trevino. Offensively, Kirk. I mean, again, all three of our guys have been there's not a consensus on this. So, Garth, go ahead and finish your thought there.
Well, no, I mean, like the thing that Lewis was bringing up about like getting an Alec Thomas, like we want to win a World Series. We don't want to look.
That's another reason.
You know, like, oh shit, like maybe 4 years down the road. No. 2023. Like, what? Like, we don't need.
That's a great point. This is an easy decision if this is a rebuilding team, because then of course you move Jansen.
Yeah. Yeah. But we're not. We're a team that's in a win now. Like, we're in our window. You know, Vlad's not getting younger. Bo's not getting younger. You know, Springer, like, we are. You know, this is the last year we have Chapman. Like, we need to do it this season. Like Jen was saying, like, this is a very, very critical year for the Toronto Blue Jays. And Alec Thomas, love him. I think he's going to be a great, great player. You know, like, I've actually bought a few of his rookie cards. I think he's good. But he's going to be what the Jays will need 4 years from now, not 2023.
And so here's an interesting...
I think Kirk
is the
guy that can play tomorrow.
So here's an interesting thought. Daltrimer says, I wouldn't be surprised if Jansen, Kirk, and Moreno are on the opening day roster. Jen, do you feel if they keep all three of them, that's a mistake?
I mean, I guess if they don't get the offers that they want, right? You're not trading for the sake of trading one of your three catchers. You have to get the return that you envision. So it wouldn't surprise me if all three are on the opening day roster for that reason.
Lewis, do you think they can find playing time for all three of these guys?
Probably not. I'd be
right.
It'd be a disappointment if one of them isn't traded. Yeah. I think
unless they're going to put Moreno in the outfield for a few games here and there. But other than that, there's
And I don't know that that's. I really don't think that that's part of the plan for him. To be completely honest, right? I know that they've played him in a couple of different positions, but I think his value is as catcher.
I think so too.
He's so athletic. He's the most athletic catcher, second to Realmuto, easily.
Mm-hmm. Which is saying a lot, right?
When's the last time you saw a catcher with like 20 stolen base speed? Like
other than JT,
I wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, other than Realmuto,
the guy's a freak athlete. Like. I just think that
he's a guy 4 years down the road that you're like, yeah, we're keeping him.
Yeah.
All right. We will move on here. We are over the 1 hour mark at this point. So let's get to a couple topics here. I know, Lewis, you might have to leave us a little early here. Your baseball season's over, but math is not. So we don't want to hold you from your studies. So why don't you kick us off here? What topic do you have for us to discuss today?
My topic I think was, what is your outfield mix for 2023? Who's it going to be? And is that include prospects like Nathan Lukes? Is Otto Lopez, you're going to see a little sprinkle of him out there. What does it look like? And who do you think we get? Basically, that's basically my question.
I'm going to jump in because I love this question. If I'm picking, I want to see George Springer in right field. I want to see Lourdes Gurriel Jr. in left. I want to see Brandon Nimmo in center field. I want to see a Cody Bellinger type, right? Where, fourth outfielder, maybe a bit of a flyer. I don't think Bellinger's going to be the guy I think he's going to want to play every day is the only reason. But if you can convince him to come and try and play his way into left field and make Lourdes really tough to get some playing time, I'm all for that type of thing. So that type of guy. And then I want a fifth outfielder like a Barger or a Otto Lopez, maybe a guy who's not necessarily, I think there's enough outfield depth on this team is what I'm saying between Merrifield and Biggio. I don't think you necessarily need a guy like Zimmer, but maybe a guy like Otto Lopez who could play some left field as well as move around the infield. That's kind of like,
I gotta see Bradley Zimmer swing his bat from a bat one more
time. We do not fucking need Bradley Zimmer.
All right? Bradley Zimmer needs us, is what, like.
Is everyone on board with the need to move Springer?
Yes. If he plays all majority of the time in center field, it's a failure.
Yeah, that's like, what I think too.
But I think with me, I obviously George and Lourdes in the corners, and if Alejandro Kirk gets traded, I think Michael Brantley is a Blue Jay, like without a shadow of a doubt. I think he's a Blue Jay. But if Kirk isn't, I think it's probably Brandon Nimmo in center field with a Cody Bellinger type, and I wouldn't be surprised if Raimel Tapia is back on this team in some form or fashion. Like
really,
like I wouldn't, because. Granted, not the greatest, not great at anything, but he was decent at everything. So
he got stuck in a situation that, he wasn't supposed to be in. He was supposed to be a fourth outfielder.
Yeah, he played like 100
days a week.
Played 130 games.
He ended up playing like 4 days a week, 5 days a week, Like, I think Tapia would be a solid fourth outfielder. Yeah. But he wasn't our fourth outfielder last year.
No.
He played way too much. And I'm right with Scott. I think Nimmo would be great. Lourdes, instead of getting like a fourth outfielder like Bellinger, I think like we have a couple of kids. Like, give them a shot as a fourth outfielder. Like, Nathan Lukes can play center field. He is a good fielder. His hitting was pretty streaky last year, but I think, you know, he's a guy you need to look at. And I mean, fourth outfielders, like, man, we had like seven of them last year. You know, we had JBJ, we had Zimmer. Like, those guys are a fucking dime a dozen. We can find those guys anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, it's when that fourth outfielder becomes like your second or third outfielder that it becomes an issue. Mm-hmm. And I think moving George to right field that'll alleviate a lot of that issue.
Well, it's interesting because I know that there was a stat given about center fielders who were over 6'2" and 230 pounds. And there's like a handful that played center field after 32 years of age, like a handful, and most of them suffered injury problems. So like, truly, getting George out of center field, I think, really is a bigger deal than maybe we've even talked about on the show so far.
Yeah.
I agree. And I think if you can keep him healthy, right? If he can be healthy for the season, roughly, then the value of his contract is even better, right? Because right now, playing him in center field and him not being able to stay on the field or be at his best when he's on the field because he does have these nagging injuries, that diminishes the value of that contract, right? And diminishes what he's able to do for the team. So I think it's of paramount importance to try to protect him from those injuries. On the Bellinger thing, I don't really think he makes sense as a fourth outfielder, to be completely honest. I think that there are other guys that the Jays could use in that position. And I think for even Bellinger, right?
Yeah.
I think he would, I don't see him signing on to be a fourth outfielder. I see him signing somewhere, and this has been discussed on Twitter and whatnot, but I see him signing somewhere for a 1 year show me deal type of thing, right? If he can regain any of his value, any of the offensive value, and then take another crack at free agency the following season. That, if I were him and his agent, Scott Boris, that seems to make the most sense.
No, 100%. I agree. And I even to further to Garth's point there, Matt Finley in chat pipes up and he's like, there's going to be a version of JBJ, Zimmer, et cetera, that available. You could pick up in March or anytime throughout the season if you need to.
We literally did that with Tapia and Zimmer. We got them 2 weeks before the season started. Mm-hmm. Or Zimmer's case a day before. Like,
I mean, shit, we moved Grishik, 4 days into the end of the season.
Yeah.
So Lewis, what's your prime outfield look like then?
Nimmo has to be my opening day center fielder. I think I'd struggle to accept less than that. We've all said it. We're winning now.
Yeah.
Signing Brandon Nimmo is win now. It's a rare case of not only does he make the team better because he's good, but he also makes Springer better because now he's your everyday right fielder. And their ability to switch in the outfield is really valuable. And then the fourth guy, it's not going to be Bellinger. It's going to be maybe like a Kevin Kiermaier. I know some people don't like him, but like, he's a good fielder. He's my fourth outfielder. Who cares? I'm giving him $4 million to run around. He stole a game card. Okay. Springer stole a World Series. But I mean, like,
the thing with Kiermaier is he has been hurt a lot the last few seasons, and somebody mentioned like we should get him and he'd be a cheap center field option. He's not a center fielder anymore. He like those injuries are piling up, and plus I just hate his face. I don't want him.
It's not the most got a punchable face, I'll say that.
An interesting question here for you guys. So 20 Legend says Teo had to be traded, but to throw him away for a bullpen arm and fringe prospect is absolutely insane. I think that that's overblowing it a little bit. I appreciate the sentiment. I am curious, however, if everyone here was a little surprised at the value that these power middle of the order bats had, because we saw the same thing happen with Hunter Renfroe, right? Like the return on these two guys weren't mind-blowing by any means. was anyone a little surprised that this was all they could get?
I think the fact that Teo only has 1 year left on his contract.
That's it, right?
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
You're not going to get back more.
Yeah, and that was the same thing with
Renfro. Stats last year weren't 2020, 2021 stats.
No.
Like, he was good, but he wasn't Silver Slugger good.
And we've been hearing Teoscar rumors for over a year now, and not just from the Mariners, right? Like, he's been shopped with the Marlins and he's been shopped around. So I feel like this front office didn't just trade him to the first person who knocked on their door, right? Like, they obviously shopped him. This was the best deal available. And when you're trying to balance an unbalanced lineup, sometimes you got to make tough decisions.
They've been looking at Macko for a really long time. Like, I think Ross Atkins mentioned that they tried to draft him, and that I've seen some Mariners guys say that the Jays have been asking about Macko for a long time. So I'm really glad that they got a guy they've been looking for. You know, that just makes me more confident in their analysis of this trade. And looking at the Renfro deal, like, Renfro and Teo were pretty similar as players. Yeah. And I think we did better off than how the Brewers did.
And I know that Eric Swanson maybe didn't excite as many Blue Jays fans as his ceiling would almost expect. And it's just because he profiles as a little bit different of a high-end reliever than maybe the type that we all wanted, which was the high velo, you know, go get him type of guy. But I mean, his K rate was huge. It was like 35%. He struck out 35% of the guys.
A lot of red on his baseball savant.
A lot of red on his savant.
I think it was 6% walk rate. So, like,
yeah.
Well, and like, the thing that people don't realize, like, with Swanson is, like, now we don't need to throw Adam Simber in there in the seventh inning when it's
95 times.
Yeah, yeah. Adam Simber can be Adam Simber again and not, you know, we're not asking him to be like this shutdown bullpen guy, which he's just not. I mean, he's a good bullpen guy, but he is not a guy that is like, oh, it's the eighth inning, let's put fucking Adam Simber in again. He's pitched 5 days this week, but that's fine.
Adam Simber had saves last year. That's how much we used him. he led the team in wins. It was weird.
So Warlu22 says, so now we are comparing ourselves to the Brewers, and that's not what I was doing. I was comparing Hunter Renfro with Teoscar Hernandez. Both on an expiring contract, both with big time power. Hunter, I think, had 29 bombs last year. Teo had, what was it, 24, 25, something like that?
I think.
I was just saying, like, for power middle of the order bats, that seems to be the return that was coming back.
And again, I mentioned this a little bit earlier. Every Blue Jays fan has rose tinted glasses for Teo, because if you go back in your head and you think about all of the bigger moments of the season, 9 out of 10 of them were Teo. Like, there was the 2 home runs against the Mariners in the playoffs. There was the home run against the Yankees. There was the go-ahead one against the Tigers he had. There was the sliding catch he made against the Cubs. Like, he's the guy that has all of the moments, but it's what he does in between the moments. It's, like, that's the big thing that people need to look back
There's at. A lot of complaining about him during the season, too.
Yeah, there's probably just as much
I was just going to say that, Jen. If you were to go back over our long tosses over the year, we've all had moments where we're like, what is up with Teoscar?
Right. Like, how many times did people – how many times – and not everybody's on Twitter, but how many times on Twitter did fans say he needed to be benched because he didn't hustle or whatever the case might be, right?
Yeah,
so let's not for the fan base needs to remember that there's
For every moment against the Yankees, there was 10 times where he was casually doing a jog and let a dude get a triple.
Yeah. For some reason. That's one thing that we're going to like about Brandon. You know, he's never going to have a slump. And people are going to not really respect him as much because he doesn't have the moments. He's always going to be the guy who touches home plate first when the line is over. He's always going to be walking. He runs to first base on walks. Like, I don't know. It was like the complete opposite of Teo.
Mm-hmm. Exactly what we need. He is the, and that's the thing. And we talked about this, right? An unbalanced lineup with a lot of redundancies and shipping Teoscar out. And I even feel that, honestly. Like, I know there's people in the chat here getting frustrated, but I feel it. Like, I kind of thought Teoscar would probably get a little bit more back, but I also truly believe that they would have gotten as much as they could, and that for them to fix this problem of just being dominated when a guy like Luis Castillo comes in and has a heck of a game. You know, they need to bring in some lefty bats. And the only way to do that is to make some holes.
Well, and if their plan is to move Springer off of center field and bring in a center fielder, you know, trading Tio allows you to talk to free agents and their agents and show how the player fits in to the plan.
Yeah.
Right? Like there is a clear path for a player to join this team.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe how early this trade was.
Well, imagine what like the front office would have had to do. Say they signed Nimmo and they still had Teo. Like what would Teo's trade value be then? The teams would be like, well, fuck, we know you have to get rid of one of those guys. Like, you know, like you're going to get less.
And to a lesser extent, that's what the Diamondbacks have right now. They have five outfielders. Four of them are left-handed. Yeah. They need to get rid of one of them. Like, so they're not going to get as much.
Yep.
It's just the way the cookie crumbles.
Okay, let's move on. Let's go to Connor here. No, Lewis, go ahead and pipe up. Do you... You got to head out. All right, buddy.
All right.
Hey, you, thanks so much for joining us, man. Always appreciate your baseball mind and all the best in the offseason here. And good luck with math tomorrow.
I feel your school pain, Lewis.
Yep. All right. Later, buddy.
Yep. All right. Okay. So my topic is, given the past few days, we have seen what a country can rally behind in Canada at the World Cup. So my question is simple. Do we care about the World Baseball Classic as much as we should, or as much as people think like it should? Because I'm kind of not caring on the World Baseball Classic as much as I thought I would. Like it's good that it's back, and now it's just simmered to, okay, cool. If it happens, it happens. So what are you guys' thoughts on that?
I didn't even know it was happening.
I mean, I rest my case. Like,
yeah. I mean, they do kind of a shit job at marketing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when the Olympics have hockey or the Olympics have basketball and the pros are playing, like that shit is everywhere. You know, the World Baseball Classic does a piss poor job of marketing it. Like, where are the ads? Where are like the players like doing commercials and like. Like it, well, it's baseball in general. They just,
yeah, like
they need somebody that's like not 70 years old in charge of their marketing department.
I didn't know either until I saw a Twitter friend post that they had, I think, booked a flight to go.
Right.
And then I was like, oh, cool. oh, great.
I hope no one brings that up on Long Toss.
For me, if something, I mean, I don't know what coverage would be like, TV coverage, if something's not easily accessible for me to watch on TV, I care a lot less. And I frankly, I don't want to look for illegal streams or this or that. Like I just make it easy to watch and I will absolutely watch. And I don't know if that's just because I'm older or whatever the case might be, but I want it easy. And you're right. Baseball does an absolutely terrible job of marketing itself. Absolutely awful. And I asked a few players about that. Like, how can baseball better market itself? And one player would not answer my question because they thought it was a trap. They really did. And so that didn't go anywhere. And then the answers that I did get from players really weren't, I mean, they weren't great. I'll just put it that way, right? So it doesn't even seem like anybody involved in the game knows how to market the sport better. And I thought that was really interesting.
Because with the World Baseball Classic, there was the, unless you look at Twitter all the time, which I kind of have to, you saw the announcement on Twitter. It's like, okay, we're coming back in 2023. It's in March. And then months went by and it's like, oh, Mike Trout's in it, I guess. Cool. Sure. Goes a couple months again. Oh, Mookie Betts and Real Muto are playing for America. Cool. And then you get the random one that I saw a couple days ago. Yoenis Cespedes is playing for Cuba, just back playing and stuff. Yeah. And then Stephen Kwan is going to play for Japan, which is cool because I think I said it was the first time a non-Japanese-born player is going to play for Japan. So that's like, but they need to hype that up more, like make a bigger deal out of it. Shohei Ohtani announced that he was going to be in the World Baseball
Classic. Yeah, he did.
And you didn't hear a peep. Like, it's just...
This WCB tournament has honestly been a failure since they started it when it comes to the marketing and the ability to get players to commit to play in it, right? Yeah. The Dominican Republic always had us as a stellar team, and it's always fun to watch. But you know what? A lot of these other teams, like the amount of times I've watched Team USA where I'm like, where are all the stars?
Yeah.
But this year they have them. This year,
yeah,
like,
yeah. This is one of the few
loaded. They're like, loaded.
The Trout's playing.
That's at the bare minimum. So their social media, MLB social media accounts, right? Should be like hype videos.
Yeah.
There should be little hype videos coming out, you know, with the different players as they get announced, as they get added to teams, you know, just start it.
And that's the type of shit that costs so little.
Right.
Yeah.
We're not asking you to buy, you know, crazy, you know, ad, you know, on ESPN and shit. Man, have a competent Twitter person. Like, hire me. I get more people watching than those guys.
And I, you guys probably haven't seen this. Did you know that the exhibition games, like teams are going to play against MLB teams in spring training?
No idea.
That came out.
That's so cool. But that I didn't know.
10 days ago. Like, and I had to look that up on Twitter. Like,
yeah. And like, I'm a pretty on Twitter guy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's not like I don't go on, you know, for a week and a half on end. Like I'm there. And it's pathetic. And it's not like I don't follow baseball accounts. Yeah. I follow every baseball account. You know, it's just, like Scott said, it is a failure. Mm-hmm. Like this should be, I'm not saying it's going to be the World Cup. It's
no.
not. But
no,
I mean, never can be it Cup. Be, you know, like the World Cup of hockey. Hockey is brutal at that stuff. And the World Cup, when they had the World Cup of hockey, it was better. It was better received. Yeah. We knew more about it. Like the baseball one is just awful, awful.
Canadians know baseball too. Like there's a market here to get everyone on board casually in a tournament like this. Like
and I think
Canadians will fucking cheer. You put a maple leaf on the front of the mill cheer for anything.
Yeah.
We could have like a world croquet championship. If it's marketed right, we're going to be like learning about croquet and shit, man.
And I think a big problem.
I didn't think you said croquet at first.
What do you think I said?
I thought you said cocaine.
Is that like, are we allowed to say whatever you thought we were going to say?
But like, even just going on the micro level of us in Canada, unless like you watch like the Blue Jays play someone and Pat Tabler says, oh, this guy was born in Canada. Do you know players are Canadian? Unless like you're like Joey Votto, like there's Joey Votto and Freddie Freeman. But I don't think most people know, unless you've obviously watched the Blue Jays, that like Nick Pavetta is Canadian. Tyler O'Neill of the Cardinals is Canadian.
Yeah.
Cal Quantrill and Josh Naylor, they're Canadian. Like, put more in, I guess for Canada, just put more into Canada. Like, make it more of an event that these Canadian players are representing Canada to win, to potentially lose two games for your country. And yay, because we all know it's going to be Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, Japan, maybe the U.S. now because they have everybody. But like, other than that, it's just a crapshoot. And there's some
Scott Carter says here, World Cocaine Championships coming soon to Miami.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, they will not have a problem marketing that event.
Nope. Scarface.
Their
is the
Twitter
logo.
Person will be on it.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, he'll be
just
on
Al,
it.
Just Al Pacino sitting in a chair as the logo. Like
speaking of baseball's lack of ability, before we move on to the next topic here, lack of ability when it comes to promoting their product. I don't know if you all saw it or not, but Alek Manoah joined Serge Ibaka on his YouTube cooking show, How Hungry Are You? And it was a really fun little episode to watch. If everyone on YouTube here hasn't seen it, definitely check it out because it was really great. And of course, little snippets were taken out because he was asked certain questions. And Ibaka, like, you could tell that the guys who got the questions written for him were trying to get some stuff out. And Alek leaned into it and said things like he thought the biggest, when asked who the biggest cheater in baseball ever was, he said Gerrit Cole. and even went over their little beef they had. And Yankees fans were really upset, but this got a lot of attention. What did you think of this?
That's what I mean. Like, shit like that, like, it's good for baseball.
That's
like,
marketing.
That is right? marketing. Like, because that
the next time, like the next time you see Alec Manoah against the Yankees, that's must watch. Like,
it took the NBA to do this for them.
I guarantee you, if it lines up this season, ESPN is going to put that on their Sunday night broadcast.
Okay, yeah.
And they are going to pump the shit out of it because he was on a cooking segment with a basketball player. Like, that's the kind of shit that baseball needs.
And I've said that before. The NBA has nailed marketing, right? They utilize their players as agents of marketing. And the players are bought in because they all are stakeholders in the NBA. Like, it's this. I mean, I'm not saying Major League Baseball can do that full model. That's not what I'm saying. No, but they know the value of their players in drawing in attention. That's what they know.
Every NBA player has a podcast.
Yeah.
Like the only baseball player that has one's fucking Trevor Bauer. You know what I mean? Like, I want Alec Manoah to have a weekly show. I want him to be on Sportsnet with like a 30-minute show every week. I want, like,
it was so funny on that. I agree with you, Garth, and I think he should. When Serge Ibaka was busting his balls about how often he pitches, like, so wait, you only work one out of every 5 days? What are you doing? Alex, like, well, I still got to go to the field and I'm resting my arm. And he's like, wait. He couldn't wrap his head around it. So yeah, Alec Manoah has the time, right?
I have just a small question on this. As fans, the past few months or year even, and Blue Jays players with quotes has been at an all-time high, and they have all backfired stupendously. So Like, we had the Vladdy one all the way back when it was the trailer in the movie. We had Alec Manoah with pressure is something you put in tires. There's Anthony Bass with the talking shit to Paul Sewald with the sweep, which apparently there was a sweep. And then even this offseason now, we've had Vladdy basically saying I'd never sign with the Yankees and we're the real rivalry with the Yankees. They hate us. And now Alex doing this. Like, is it, can we just, I was about to say shut up and play, but like, can we just tone it down a bit on the quotes that could very well backfire?
But the thing is, like, people are going to watch those games next
year. Yes. Are you telling me
that, like, Rodgers is not going to have record numbers for the Yankees games next year? Of course they are. Of course they are. Yeah. And I want Gerrit Cole to plunk a Blue Jay. Like, I want, like, man, people will watch those games. Like,
I'm with you and I agree, but Connor, I get what you're saying because being on the losing end of quotes like that always hurts so much more.
I got PTSD. The grand proclamations maybe need to be toned down.
Yes, the Vladdy one with the it's not a trailer, this is the movie was, that's like you need to win the World Series essentially there. Like,
yeah, tone that the grandiosity of it down. But if you're doing stuff to fire up these rivalries or whatever, I mean, yeah, it will not look pretty if the Yankees, you know, win, you know, 2/3 of their games against the Jays next season, I guess. But, you know, at least this is fun and people are chatting about it.
Again, this is probably just me being very mad that everything that we've said has backfired on us and the way that our season ended so spectacularly.
Like, yeah.
So, Connor, there was something we've been lucky enough to have Arden Zwelling on the show almost half a dozen times. And one thing he always gives me a hard time about is like reading too much into Twitter. And I know we're on Twitter, right?
Yeah.
So we see Yankees Twitter and we see all the hate and all the ridiculousness. And maybe it's a bigger deal to us who are on it. But like just for casual baseball fans, truly, this is the sort of marketing they need, right? Yes. Taking these Alec Manoah clips, taking these Vladdy clips, right? So,
yeah.
Okay.
I'm scarred. I'm a Leafs fan and a Blue Jays fan. I'm scarred. Like, I'm sick of it.
Garth, I know that Jen's going to have a couple for us to choose from. So we'll go to you here for your topic.
All right. I saw today that Aristides Aquino signed in Japan. So back in like, I think it was 2018 or 2019, I can't remember. The hottest card in baseball was Aristides Aquino. Like his rookie autograph card was selling for like $1,500. It was fucking bananas. He had a card where he was on the same card as Yordan Alvarez. And like they, it was like a shared rookie card, and it was a hot card too.
Talk about two just splits.
So he like he went from being like the next thing in Cincinnati to playing in Japan in a couple of seasons. So this past year was one of the strongest rookie classes I've ever seen. Like truly, they, we had seven or eight guys that were just like, wow, they're special. They're going to be special for a long time. I'm going to throw out some names, and I want you guys to pick the one that you can see playing in Japan in 2025. Okay?
No, all right.
All right. J-Rod. I mean, fuck, he's not playing in Japan, but J-Rod, Kwan, Pena, Bobby Witt. What's the guy from Atlanta? Michael
Harris.
Michael Harris.
The third.
Yeah, and or like even like Spencer Torkelson. Out of those, like what highly touted rookie can you see just like not getting it?
This is interesting. I like this question.
Because it always happens. It happens with it every does. Every year there's a guy that's there are a couple of guys you're just like, oh man, he had he batted 270 with 85 RBIs. And he didn't get called up until like the end of May. And then 2 years later, it's like, oh, fuck, I remember that guy. He had a pretty good stretch for a couple of weeks. You know, like there's always that guy that everyone thinks is like can't miss. And that he just shits the bed.
Is it bad if I say Gabriel Moreno?
That's so exactly what I was just thinking.
No.
I mean, oh, my goodness. Like,
I mean, it would completely suck.
It would piss me off, but like it's.
But
I was.
Why not?
I was thinking, and my answer was going to be as long as it's not Gabriel Moreno. So
yeah,
Connor.
But like on a serious, I think it's going to be maybe Spencer Torkelson, because
me too.
He came up and he couldn't hit a lick.
Yeah.
Like he was supposed to be the same. He was supposed to be not the next Miguel Cabrera, but he was supposed to replace Miguel Cabrera in some way, form, or fashion, and he. He barely hit the ball last year. Like, granted, obviously, rookie can happen. And we're kind of, as baseball fans, we're spoiled with so many guys that are like 20 and 21 years old coming up and being superstars. But I think, if it's anybody, it's Torkelson and then like the 5% chance Gabriel Moreno.
I think Torkelson's probably my vote there too. I can see like Stephen Jared Kwan Kelnick. Taking a pretty big step back.
Jared Kelnick doesn't count, but Jared Kelnick.
Yeah.
He's not a rookie anymore, but Jared Kelnick. Like,
but Stephen Kwan, I can see Kwan too, because his game is
a good bit of luck.
Like if you have 30 home run potential, people will keep you around.
Yeah.
You know, like if you have like legit power, there are teams that will give you a shot until you're like 28, 29. Until they're just like, nah, the guy's lost. But a guy like Stephen Kwan, like, if his on-base percentage takes a bit of a hit, if his strikeout percentage goes up a tick, he's not a legitimate, you know, MLB player. He has no power. So, I mean,
that's kind of why I looked at Kwan as well, is you look at his profile and you're like, oh, man, if there's like, well, if he, like
margin
you
for
said,
error is small.
Yeah. There's this point. If anything benefits Stephen Kwan, he's playing for the Guardians, a team that literally does the exact opposite of everybody else in baseball. They just put the ball in play, run, play defense, and pitch. Like he'll fit there. But yeah, like the thing with Stephen Kwan is a lot of his hits last year, like they weren't like he didn't barrel a lot of baseballs. Like he was just running stuff out. So if anything, it's like Torkelson, Kwan. I know he's not a rookie, but Jared Kelnick, just because his face.
I think Kelnick's done already.
Oh, he's already done.
He looks like he came
lost.
Up and he came up and he was supposed to be like a corner outfield for the next decade.
They traded, I think it was Robinson Cano and Edwin Diaz to get him. So that's that's what he's batting maybe 150.
Yeah.
He's Cody Bellinger without the 3 years without the 3 years of actually being good.
Yeah.
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 All right, we'll move along to Jen here. What do you have for topics?
I have three.
Wouldn't be long toss if Jen didn't have eight topics.
So we can do one, two, all, doesn't matter, group choice. Topic number one, what is your confidence level in Jose Barrios heading into next season? That's number one. Topic number two, if the Jays don't win the division next season or get out of the first round, what is their next move? Topic number three, baseball wide. Pete Rose made another appeal recently to Rob Manfred to be considered for the Baseball Hall of Fame. Yes or no? And I don't mean with an asterisk in some dark corner preserved for the bad boys of baseball. Just simple, straight up yes or no. Are you giving him that pardon and letting him in? So any of those topics.
I'll start with Pete Rose. So to start with, I think Barry Bonds should be in the Hall of Fame. I think that this idea that the Hall of Fame is this shrine, it's a museum, and I don't understand why we can't just put everyone who deserves to be in there and then tell their story, right? Like, I'm not saying put Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame and then never bring up the scandal or never talk about the gambling and never go into his story. But I think that there's a place in the hall to put some of these guys who have done extraordinary things in the game of baseball. And if some of it involved shadiness, include that in the story.
Yeah.
I don't know. And then go ahead. Let's go subject to subject here.
Hall of Fame. If you're going to allow Tris Speaker, who was a Klan member, to be in the Hall of Fame, like Barry Bonds, yes, in. Pete Rose, yes, in. I fucking hate Pete Rose. He is a piece of shit. He is a misogynist. He admitted to statutory rape. Yep. He is a garbage human being. He also has the most hits in baseball history. Mm-hmm. Like, you can put on his plaque that, yeah, Pete Rose is a piece of shit, but he had 4,172 hits. You know, you can do that. Like, there are garbage humans in the Hall of Fame. Not just he took steroids. I mean, like, there are wife beaters. There are, like, racists, like, self-professed racists.
Sure, guys, Ty Cobb's under both of those categories.
Yeah, guys that were proud of that shit.
Yeah.
And they're in. So, yeah, you can put Pete Rose in, but I mean, like where does it stop? Yeah, Pete Rose gambled, but fuck, I put on a baseball game and there's like 18 gambling ads between for every commercial.
Yeah, right. That doesn't help. That doesn't help.
You know, yeah, Barry Bonds did steroids, but okay, are we gonna ban Jose Altuve? Are we gonna ban Carlos Correa when their time comes?
Garrett Cole.
Well, I mean, Garrett Cole, I don't want him in. But literally anybody else.
We got to draw a line somewhere.
You guys know my disdain for Garrett Cole. It's deep. But, man, like you said, it's a museum. It's not a popularity contest. To have a Hall of Fame without Barry Bonds, Barry Bonds is the greatest hitter who's ever played the game.
Yeah,
I don't give a shit. He's better than Ruth. He's better than Williams. He is the greatest hitter of all time, period. So yeah.
Jen, how do you feel about that? Like, how do you feel about the Hall? Do you think Pete, like, no way?
I don't think the Hall of Fame, as you said, is some shrine to great men. It really isn't. And you know, I have a feeling that there are people that haven't been named that are in the Hall of Fame that are also dirtbags, and we just maybe don't know the extent of the dirtbagginess of them, right? Mm-hmm. Or whatever. That aside. My one argument against Pete Rose is the fact that he broke the one rule, the cardinal rule that is outside every single clubhouse, right? Hmm. That's the thing. Baseball has had its eras with the steroids and this and that, right? And it is definitely not, you know, they definitely have already breached, you know, the their own, what do you call it? I know there's a clause in there for the Hall of Fame, like a, what is it?
Was like a morality,
morality clause? Some sort
right,
of,
the morality
so
clause.
They've already broken that 100
times.
Yeah,
that's BS, the morality
so clause. That can go out the window. My one argument against Rose is that he essentially broke the cardinal rule of baseball, the one that has always existed and is and has been posted outside of that every clubhouse for as long as I don't even know how
since
long.
Since 1919.
So, yeah. So for I was gonna say basically since baseball began, right?
Well, since the Black Sox scandal, you know, like
yeah. So that would be my one argument. It has nothing to do with how terrible a human being he is or anything like that.
I think when it comes to the Hall of Fame, one rule that I hate about the Hall of Fame is you're only there for 10 years. Like, what's the point of that? If someone's good, just if you give enough time for people to vote for them, they will vote for them. 10 years is a long amount of time. I don't get why there's a set time on it. And in the case of Pete Rose, I hate him. He's a disgusting human being. And I think if all of his letters didn't come out and basically like try to make it a pity party for him towards Rob Manfred, like if we can, you obviously can't take out all of the stuff that he's done, but if you take out all the, like the misogyny and all that stuff, if he was just a better human being that so happened to cheat, I think he's in the Hall of Fame. It's the fact that he's also a piece of shit. Like if he had the personality and like the history of like a Teoscar Hernandez, for example, he's in the Hall of Fame. Like, but it's the fact that he's such a deplorable person. And Barry Bonds was a multiple time MVP and a multiple time All-Star before the steroids. So he had a Hall of Fame 7, 8 years, 9 years before he even decided to take the steroids.
He had three.
Just a second here. I would love for one of you to clear this up. I know just YSF Memories is getting frustrated in chat and just is saying that one rule. Explain it. So like the Pete Rose breaking the one rule.
Sorry, I thought it was clear from the context, you can't bet on baseball.
You can't. Yes.
As a player, as a coach, as a manager, MLB
team, you cannot gamble on baseball.
Yeah.
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 You have too much inside knowledge, you know, what players might be injured, what players are this or that, like of your own teammates. Mm-hmm. And so that is, you know, too much opportunity to then throw a game.
Yeah.
And things of that nature. So that is the one cardinal rule of baseball. And I'm sorry, I thought it was implied from the context of the conversation.
No, all good. YSF, hope that clears it up. Thanks, John. I appreciate that. Okay. Jose Berríos. Personally, I think he's going to be fine. I don't know if he's going to be the stud everyone kind of projected him to be when they signed him to this massive contract. But I think that will he return to the 4 ERA guy who can never get injured and throw 200 innings? Yeah, I kind of do.
Like the thing with Jose Berríos is you saw it last year that he was great in periods. Like it was just, if he can get rid of how low his lows were and keep how good his high points were, he'll be a good 3 starter, which let's be honest with ourselves here. Like, obviously this could be revisionist history. If we expected Jose Berríos to be the ace of this rotation for the entirety of his contract, we're kidding ourselves here. Like, so if he gets to a 3.8 or 3.9, which I'll live with it. Like, just don't take us out of baseball games like you did for so many times. Like, which
and
I guess
when,
like
and when like when he blew up so early.
Up.
Like first, second inning, and like that's just it. That the game's over.
Yeah.
Like you're not coming back down 10 runs because Jose shit the bed in the first inning. Like that, like we need him. I think he'll bounce back. He's too good. Like when his curveball is on, oh my, like that curveball is ridiculous. Like it's unhittable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but,
And honestly, I think even Jose Berríos, as I mean, they're paying him too much to be a number four, 3 starter there where he has an ERA around 4. But you know what? There's huge value in a guy who's got some deadly stuff. Like you said, his curveball is nasty. He does log a lot of innings. He doesn't get injured. Like, there is value in that, and hopefully the ceiling is higher than that. But my confidence that he can return to his career average is pretty high.
Yeah.
Where are you at, Jen?
I actually don't know where I'm at. And that was why I brought up the question, to be completely honest. I agree that he is probably ideally the number 3 on this team, not a 1 or 2. And I don't know that the Jays have an ace. Like, I don't think the ace is the team's best pitcher. I think an ace has a different meaning than that. I think it's like, who are the most elite pitchers in the league? And not every team has one of those, right? So I would like to, for instance, I would like to see another year out of Manoah before I would potentially consider him to be an ace in baseball, just me personally. I would like to think that Berríos has enough experience that he will bounce back from last season.
And I don't really like want to read into it too much, but I do know that he did have some off the field stuff that happened this year. So that might have played something into it. Mm-hmm. Like, and at the end of the day, he's not going to be as bad as I think. Like, people were saying that Kikuchi was better than him at some points, and I'm just like, never. No. He was never that bad. But, and if he can, like, we saw the potential, not the potential, I guess, quote unquote, when the game against the Twins, like when he was in Toronto and he struck out 14 people. There was the game against the Phillies, like I think it was John Schneider's, or the last game with Charlie Montoyo. Like, he's good. It's just a matter of, like I said before, making those lows a lot higher up in the terms of like just neutral. Because I remember one game specifically, it was against the Guardians. He gave up 8 runs in 5 innings. Like, you can't do that. Just if you go, if your bad starts are 4 runs in 5 innings, I'm laughing. So, like, just he'll be fine, I think.
He'll be fine. I like that. You know, 20 Legend here in chat says, I'm not worried about Berríos. He's talented. He's got ridiculous stuff. He'll be fine. And I think that's kind of where we're all settling.
Just be fine is the word. Just be fine. Like, you don't need to be good.
And
be
really,
fine.
If you look at last year, like, what a weird outlier of a year for the man. Like, just if you look at his home and away splits, you look at his quality starts to like blow ups, like everything about him was just weird.
Well, right? he didn't have any meh starts.
No,
he was like, he was like, holy shit, he's unhittable. Or it's like, he looks like a double A pitcher, you know? Like, there was no middle ground. So I would like to see more middle ground from Jose Berríos. Like, you know, just don't shit the bed, like, spectacularly.
Just don't do what you did opening day. Is basically just like,
oh man, that was.
We were so thankful we won. That game.
We still won the game somehow, but.
Like, Jesus, 4 runs in a third.
Let's end on this. My topic was going to be Ross Stripling and what you, as the season, as this offseason plays out more, do you think the Blue Jays are in on him? And should they be?
First off, I forgot he was gone. Like, that's like, I forgot he was gone. But I think the less and less I hear as time goes on, the more I'm like, oh, he's not coming back. He's a Texas Ranger. Like, he has Texas Ranger written all over him. He's from Texas. They need pitching. He'll probably be fairly cheap. So, but I hope he comes back because we need him.
Like, if he's fairly cheap, I hope the Jays are in on it.
Yeah. Well, like what's cheap? Like 3 at 36?
Yeah. If he gets the Kikuchi deal, that I would do that every day.
But
I would give him a Kikuchi deal, but there's probably a team out there that will go, you know, that extra million or two, you know. This is it for Ross Stripling. Like, this is his retirement contract.
He has Angels, you know, or Texas Rangers overpay written all over him.
Is 4 years $45 million too much, Jen?
I'm going to admit my own weakness. I'm not very good at evaluating contracts.
That's 11 in a bit per year. If that's,
but that's thing. 4 years. Like he's not 28.
You know, right. I wouldn't necessarily want the fourth. I don't think you could expect much in the fourth year.
No.
One thing I will say about that fourth year is that if there is a comparable out there, that if I'm Ross Stripling's agent, I'm pointing to Steven Matz all day long and being like, yeah, he's 2 years older, but this is the first real opportunity he's had to start. And he had just over a 3 ERA.
But you know what the team is going to say? Yeah. Yes. Look at Steven Matz. You know, like that's what the team's going to say.
Steven Matz had a year. Yeah. He had an okay year in Toronto.
Yeah, look at what he did last year. And they'll be like, that's why we're not giving you 4 years. So.
Do you think he gets 4 years, Garth? Like, do you think, I know that there's tons of reasons why he shouldn't, but do you think he will?
Pitching is a very rare commodity. And there's a team that's going to look at last year's stats and say, hey, this is the first time that he's actually had a chance to be a consistent starter. And he was good. Like, he was really good. And, you know, if he's not, maybe he could be like that swingman guy that, you know, gives you 40, maybe 35 appearances, but maybe only a dozen starts or something. You know, there's value in that. And we saw it last year. Like, we would have been screwed if Stripling didn't
the Jays season.
He saved the season.
Without a doubt.
Like he became our third best pitcher, starting pitcher, and he was making peanuts and he never complained. He just went out there, did his shit. There's probably a team that's going to give him 4 years.
If you look at his numbers, I mean, I can't think of another pitcher that was yo-yoed between the bullpen and starting rotation as much in a season and it not mess with them. I mean, we've watched the Jays do this before, right? Like, it kind of ruined Joe Biagini's career. So, there are reasons why yo-yoing a guy back and forth is not a good idea and it doesn't always work out. But Ross never fumbled.
Stripling had a save last year.
He did?
Yeah, he
had a save last year.
He had a save, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, like to have a guy that can start 20 games, pitch 15 out of the bullpen, and get you a save, like there's value there, and I don't know if there's 4 years of value, but some team that's desperate enough is probably going to give him that fourth year.
One thing I think he does have playing for him is the fact that he's not a velo pitcher. He is a guy with four pitches that he locates. And that's such a rare commodity in today's pitching landscape. You know, there's a lot of guys that probably have a higher ceiling than Ross Stripling, but they also probably have a lower floor. And there is something to be said for that.
Well, maybe a guy like Stripling could maybe pitch till he's 38, 39. You know, like go down the Jamie Moyer route of just being able to throw junk that no one can hit, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think this wraps the show up beautifully right here. I just want to say a very heartfelt thank you to the 50 plus of you in the chat here. Really appreciate you tuning in and following along. So good to see my good friends here. Connor, thank you so much for coming back on. Let the people know where they can find the flight deck.
Oh, yeah. Well, first off, thank you guys for having me back. It's always great being here. And the flight deck podcast, I do it every week. It's been, we did it twice a week for the playoffs, which kind of sucks because the Blue Jays were in it for 2 days. But yeah, we're back doing it in the off season. You can find it on YouTube and all of your podcast apps at the Flight Deck Podcast. We're on Twitter at the Flight Deck. And we're doing some, we're planning, I'm going to quote planning to have try and get some guests on, do some fun drafts for stuff. Okay, Garth, I get it. You like subtweeted me a couple days ago. Like, I get it. All right. It's November. The season's in April. But yeah, we're going to do a thing that we have is drafting the top five walk-up songs for the Blue Jays, or like your favorite cult players, like your Ben Revere's, your Munenori Kawasaki type. So we're going to do some stuff like that in the off season, and hopefully we're going to have a good run to actually have good free agency. So yeah, it's going to be fun.
Awesome. All right, Garth. Thanks so much for joining us, buddy. It's always good to see you. Man. Appreciate you sending the baseball cards.
I missed you, man. I haven't seen you.
We're going to have you back on here more often. Where can the folks follow you on Twitter?
Same name, Garth Orgy. You can find me on Instagram. Instagram's more of just baseball cards. I don't really delve into any of the nonsense that I do on Twitter. So,
and for those of you out there who are into baseball cards, Garth runs a very cool YouTube channel, Wax Facts.
Yeah, I'm actually, now that I'm not working so much, like I'm planning on having an episode maybe tomorrow. I have 4 months off, so I need something to do. So that page or that YouTube channel will be getting a lot more attention. So and if you have any questions about baseball cards or you got a kid that's into the cards, give me a shout. Hit me up on Twitter. I'll send them a few. So
awesome. And Jen, we always appreciate the glorious baseball mind that is baseball. Jen, where can everyone find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at baseball_Jen. And that's Jen with two N's. And thank you to everybody who tuned in tonight.
Absolutely. And a special thanks to Scott Carter and Matt Finley, who just donated a little cash to the old walk-off fund. So thanks very much, guys. Yeah. All right, everybody, take care of yourselves. Thank you so much. We haven't been doing long toss lately, but it's good to get one under the belt again. So cheers.
Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to the Walk-Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osborne with a drive. Cheese and cracker shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.